Today's episode is sponsored by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/brainson. Just go to Indeed.com/brainson right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/brainson. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Today's episode is sponsored by Greenlight. Did you know that 27 states don't require a personal finance course for students, even though teens score an average of 64% on the National Financial Literacy Test? Let's make a difference. Our friends at Million Bazillion and Greenlight are hitting the road, visiting schools to teach important lessons on financial literacy. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live and interactive. Million Bazillion Live is in partnership with Greenlight, the money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That's greenlight.com/million.
You're listening to Brains On, where we're serious about being curious.
That paint on your wall,
or on a fire truck,
or a park bench,
it's stuck there.
You could get it off, but it wouldn't be that easy.
Today we're asking how. How does paint stick?
We'll find out right now.
Keep listening.
You're listening to Brains On from NPR News and Southern California Public Radio. I'm Molly Bloom, and my co-host today is 11-year-old Aiden Bay from Los Angeles. Hi, Aiden.
Hi, Molly.
Aiden, you are a painter. And what kind of paint do you like to use?
Acrylics, water-based paints.
And how long have you been painting for?
As far as I can remember, I think since preschool, which was like 4 or 5, maybe even younger.
And what kind of subjects do you like to paint?
I like sports. I do like sports players, like baseball players and football players. But then I also like doing things like robots because I think they're really cool looking. And it's really fun to do it with paint.
For people who haven't painted before, how does it start? How do you first start your paintings?
Well, I started this not too long ago. But how I started is I get this thing called gesso. It's like this white paint. And you put it onto the canvas before, so it becomes really nice and smooth. And then, like, when the paint comes on, it comes on a lot easier. So that's how I start.
And then do you sketch first with, like, a pencil?
Yeah, I sketch with a pencil. Sometimes I do it freely, and I just start with paint, maybe. But usually I'll do it with pencil. And then I paint it with the colors I want. And then I'll keep on doing, like, more layers, because the first layer, it's probably not going to come on as smoothly as maybe you want it to go.
So the painting is made up of many layers of paint.
Yes, it's not just one. Sometimes it may, but not really.
So people who look at paintings, they might just see a painting and they might have no idea how many layers went into it.
For some people, they're probably not even, like, if they didn't know paintings, they'd probably think that they just put on one layer of paint.
Aiden, do you mix your own paints?
Yeah, I have this one chart, and actually, you know, multiplication tables?
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a big chart, and then it shows you. Well, it's kind of like that. You have to, like, get two colors, like these base colors, and I have them all. And then you have to, like, of the color you want, it shows you, like, what two colors you need to mix it.
That's really cool. So if you want to make some green color, you would need, like, a yellow and a blue, for instance.
That's, like, the base. But also, you might get, like, a regular green. You can, like, add a little bit of white if you want it lighter, and some people think you might need black to make it darker, but it sometimes can be kind of goopy. So stick around sort of like maybe a gray or a brownish.
Do you ever think of painting like a science or a math because of the adding and subtracting and the mixing that you're doing?
Not really, because I like painting because it's really stress-free. And it gets complicated at sometimes, but then I think after a while, I've been painting for a while, so it's got really easy.
Aiden knows a lot about painting, and we heard from another painter, 8-year-old Sadie from Oakland. She emailed us with a question.
What makes paint stick? I thought it was a good question because I don't know, and I don't know if many people do, and I just really want to know. I think it's probably some, like a material in the paint, but I don't know what material.
To find out how paint sticks, we're going to start by zooming in, way in, to learn more about what paint, and really everything else, is made of.
Our pal Jackie is going to take it from here.
Have you heard of atoms before? They're kind of a big deal. Even though they're very tiny, like a million times smaller than the width of a human hair. Pretty much everything on Earth is made up of atoms. You, me, everything. Now, some atoms like to link up with other atoms to form bigger things called molecules. Kind of like how a few smaller Lego pieces go together to make a bigger Lego piece. For paint to stick, the atoms that make up the paint molecules have to interact with the atoms that make up the wall molecules. So how do atoms and molecules interact with each other? To find out, let's visit a molecule party.
Molecule party!
Hey, H2O! I haven't seen you since the pool. How's it going?
Oh, you know, just floating by.
Much like friends hanging out, atoms like to interact. It's how they link together to form molecules. But they interact for different reasons. Sometimes it's because these atoms share something in common, called an electron. These are tiny negatively charged particles that spin around the atom. Atoms really like electrons. If they get just the right amount, they feel balanced and right with the world. Take these two atoms over here, for instance.
Hey, cool electrons you got there.
Yeah, I got a bunch. Actually, they're pretty nifty.
I've only got a few. It's not as fun. I wish I had more.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Why don't we share some of mine? Then it'll be like we both have a ton.
Whoa, you do that for me? Bro, we are gonna be the best friends.
When atoms share electrons like this, it's called a covalent bond. Those are very hard interactions to break up. Sometimes atoms don't just share, though. They straight up give away their electrons. This can happen when a negatively charged atom and a positively charged atom interact to make a molecule. These two atoms are really attracted to each other the same way the positive side of one magnet is drawn to the negative side of another. Take this couple, for instance.
This is so fun. I just love parties.
Parties are lame.
Seriously? What's not to love? There's pizza, there's soda.
I prefer salads and sparkling water.
You don't like talking to friends?
Rather be reading books.
Dancing?
Sitting.
Games?
Meditation.
Hanging out late?
Getting up early.
Dogs?
Cats.
Sunshine?
Rain clouds.
You are... the most fascinating person I have ever met. I think I'm in love.
Me too. I've never met someone so different, and yet I just can't get enough of your positive attitude.
I want you to have something.
What is it?
Here, open it.
Electrons. I've never felt so balanced. You're good to have around.
Isn't that sweet? They're bonding to form a molecule. When one atom gives electrons to another like this, they form what's called an ionic bond.
Ionic in the house, say yeah! Yeah! Covalent in the house, say yeah! Yeah!
Now, ionic and covalent bonds usually help to form molecules. These are the bonds that allow certain atoms to link up to become paint molecules. So, once you've got your paint molecules, how do they stick to the wall molecules? Well, this takes a different kind of interaction, one that's not so intense. Like over here, we have a group of friend atoms sitting on one side of a table. They're chatting with a different friend group on the other side of the table.
Oh my gosh, you don't say.
Gosh, it's so interesting.
Now, at any given moment, one friend might be really interested in what someone on the other side of the table is saying.
So, once we were bonded, I mean, nothing could break us up. Until water came along.
Wait, what? Water enters the picture? Tell me more.
But that interest may only last a few seconds before that atom's attention drifts.
Well, water used to be like my best friend. But then, things got a little crazy, and then water wasn't really my best friend.
Speaking of water, I'm thirsty. Maybe I should go get a drink.
But before that friend can leave, his pal to the right might suddenly get really interested in what someone else across the table is saying.
Hey, dude, did you hear the story Carbon is telling? It's so funny. Check it out.
What? Tell it to me.
Well, you know,
I'm like one of the key building blocks of all life on Earth.
In this case, no one atom at the table is strongly interacting with any other one for very long. But as a group, they stay put because at any given moment, a few of them are interested enough to keep talking. On an atomic level, this kind of interaction happens because those atoms sometimes have very brief moments where one side becomes positive or negative. As we mentioned earlier, positive atoms like to stick around negative atoms. So, for this ultra-short period, an atom might be attracted to another atom, but only for that instant before it goes back to feeling neutral. If it happens enough times, dispersed across enough atoms, things stick. See?
Hey, should we get going?
Nah, let's sit here and talk a while longer. I wanted to ask that atom over there about valence.
Oh, no, that sounds cool. Okay, I'm down to stick around.
This kind of interaction is called a dispersion force. It's an example of an intermolecular bond that's weaker than covalent or ionic bonds, but it's just as important. Paint usually sticks to things thanks to these weaker intermolecular bonds. So, next time you brush on some paint, imagine the paint molecules sitting at a table with the wall molecules chatting. They'll keep the conversation going, and that'll keep the paint stuck to the wall.
Y'all ready to spell with me? Somebody say B!
B-O-N-D.
Ha! B-O-N-D. B-O-N-D. Say it with me. Molecule party, yeah!
Now we're going to zoom out a little more and find out what ingredients make up paint.
To find out, we talked to someone who knows a lot about paint.
My name's Rich Simon.
Rich is a chemist who works at Valspar.
They make paint.
And Rich's job is all about solving paint mysteries. To start off, he told us paint is made up of four parts.
Pigment, which is the color.
Solvent, which is the liquid.
Resin, which carries the pigment.
And additives. Now, paints go through a transformation when they go from being wet to dry.
The solvent for most paints is water.
And the resin can be something like latex. When you look at a latex molecule, it looks like a long chain bonded together. Those kinds of molecules are called polymers.
What's happening in that situation is your water is evaporating off. Your polymer are in, you can think about it as little beads that are floating around inside the water. They're what we would use the term dispersed. And as the water is evaporating off, your beads start to come together. You want those beads not only to stick together, but you want them to start forming together. While that water is evaporating off, is you want those polymers, those molecules, to start entwining with each other.
So as the water evaporates, those beads of resin spread out and create a thin film of paint over the surface. It's that film that's left behind that ends up being the paint we see on a surface.
But not every paint likes every surface. A paint that is perfect for wood might not stick to metal, and vice versa.
So you really have to engineer or modify your paints in such a way that's specific for your surface that you want. So if they didn't like going to that surface, and they weren't interacting with that surface, you would just be able to pull it off like a sheet of paper.
At Valspar, where Rich works, they make all kinds of paints.
From beige wall paint
to green tractor paint
to a purple grape soda can.
Rich's lab helps figure out which paint will stick to which surface.
If someone is trying to make a new paint and it's not working, Rich will figure out why it's not.
We're sort of the problem solvers, the ones who have the high-tech equipment to be able to understand what is happening in a paint system. Everything that happens is because of changes that are happening at this microscopic and molecular level that we can't see, but we have instrumentation to be able to help us understand.
Brains on.
And now, Aiden, before we go any further, we have some important business to take care of. It's time for the mystery sound.
Mystery sound.
Are you ready? Here it is. Do you have any guesses?
It sounds kind of like a jet from a plane engine, like how it starts. And also, it kind of sounds like the waves from the ocean.
And did you hear that little noise that was kind of like a swishing noise, like the shh, 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 shh over yeah. top of that? Well, while you think about it, we're going to come back to it in a little bit and we'll hear it again.
Okay.
And you can see if you have any other guesses.
All right.
First, we're going to talk to someone who makes paint that hasn't been designed in a lab.
James Griffith lives in Los Angeles, California. He paints animals using a very special medium.
We won't ruin the surprise. Let's let James tell us about it himself. Welcome to Brains On.
Good to be here.
So what do you use for paint?
Well, I use tar, and I get the tar at the La Brea Tar Pits.
For those of us not in Los Angeles, what are the La Brea Tar Pits?
The La Brea Tar Pits is a magical place. Right in the middle of Los Angeles is a portal to the ancient past. And it's a big hole in the ground. And in that hole bubbles up this tar from an underground lake, a reserve of tar that's been there for millions of years. And that tar is famous because over those millions of years, various animals that have once lived and now are extinct got trapped into that tar. And as a result, it has one of the largest warehouses, if you will, of ancient bones of animals that no longer exist.
Do you use tar? Do you like add things to it, or you just use plain tar?
Well, if I use tar straight from the tar pits, it would stay sticky for millions of years. And that could be a real problem if anybody wanted to keep the painting for very long or didn't want to have things stick to it. So I add a lot to it. It's sort of an alchemy of chemicals, but as you probably are aware of how paint is made, there's a lot of chemicals that can go into paint to make it work and stay dry.
Do you paint on like wood, canvas, paper?
The tar is fairly acidic, and what that means is that if you were to put it on a fabric or paper, it would eventually cause the paper to rot. So I have to put it on a neutral medium that will be easy to preserve. So I use metal, and I spray it with a primer, and then I put gesso on top so it's white. And then I paint with the tar in very thin layers. And so far, the years I've been doing this, it hasn't broken down yet.
Wow.
Tar is dark, and it's fairly brown even when you thin it down. And so my paintings sort of look like they're made with coffee. And I thought, I need some more color in here. So I hike a lot. I go off in the wilderness, so to speak, in nature. And I'm always looking around at the materials around me to see what else could I stick in a painting. Pollen is one thing. It's yellow. And so I collect pollen in the right season, and sometimes I mix that with chemicals to be like a paint, but sometimes I simply sprinkle it on the paint when it's wet, the tar paint. I use sometimes minerals, old rocks and things. If I see a bright red rock in Utah, I might pick it up and see if I can grind it into a powder and make paint out of it.
Yeah, I saw some blue in some of your paintings.
Yeah. That's copper sulfate, and it makes a beautiful blue. The trouble with working with that is it has a danger side to it. It's poison, but it can be handled carefully, and it's a beautiful, beautiful blue.
And if kids were interested in making their own paint out of natural materials, is there somewhere you would recommend they start?
You know, you can make paint in many simple ways by just taking acrylic varnish that you can buy in a store, an art store, and just add stuff to it. You could add sand that you find in the playground. You could add glitter that you buy in a store. But you can just start sticking stuff in paint and it'll dry. And essentially, that is paint.
Thanks so much for being here today, James.
My pleasure. Good to meet you.
Head to our website, brainson.org, to find out more about James Griffith's paintings. We know you're curious. What questions do you want to see answered on Brains On? Send them to us.
You can email them to brainson@m, as in Minnesota, pr.org. Or tweet us on Twitter. We're brains_on.
If you're a Brains On super fan, help us out by leaving a review in iTunes. The more reviews we have, the easier it is for other kids and parents to find us.
It's quick and easy, and you can tell the world there why you listen to Brains On. Thanks. Ears open, brains on. Let's go back to the mystery sound. Here it is. Any final guesses?
It sounds sort of like a brush going like on a canvas or some type of surface really quickly.
You are so very close. Here is the answer.
That was the sound of using a cotton swab to clean a painting.
That's Christy Jeffcoat. She's a painting conservator at the Midwest Art Conservation Center in Minneapolis. She helps restore paintings that have been damaged or have deteriorated over time.
As soon as a paint is applied onto the surface, it starts deteriorating, actually. It starts aging, just like people do. When a painting comes into the lab, the first thing we do is what we call an examination. As is the case with this painting, it had a very yellow oxidized varnish on top. The traditional varnishes, while in the beginning give it a very nice saturated, beautiful gloss look on the surface, yellow over time. And that was the case with this one. And then also there was just a lot of retouch. So somebody had tried to clean it at some point in its life, and in doing so, overcleaned it, removed some of the original paint, and they covered all those spots up that they had overcleaned with a new paint. And so as a conservator, one thing that we do, we don't become the artist, we never cover up original paint.
Christy works with really old paint. Some of it is up to 600 years old. But what do you think the future of paint is?
I think there's a lot of paint still in its baby steps. I think it's gonna get a lot more advanced.
So what would you like to see paint be able to do that it can't do now?
I think change colors would be awesome, but I think that's pretty far in the future. I think I can just think of a color I want it to be, and then when it comes on, it'll be the exact same color I want. And also, the paint never really runs out on your brush. Like, one dip could last, an entire canvas. That'd be really cool.
That would be really cool. Maybe someone will invent that one day. The explanation of why paint sticks is complicated.
It has to do with what the paint is made of.
Solvent, resin, pigment, and additives.
And how it dries.
The solvent evaporates.
And the molecules the paint and surface are made of.
And how they bond together. That's it for this episode of Brains On.
This episode was produced by Sandin Totten, Mark Sanchez, and Molly Bloom.
Many thanks to Keith Bay, Remy Emdor, Rich Simon, Colin Turner, Francisco Zayera, Stephen Hobbs, Chelsea Martinez, and Colin Campbell. And thanks to our Molecule actors, Jackie Fuller, Eric Ringham, Meg Martin, Curtis Gilbert, and Tom Weber.
To hear more episodes, head to our website,
brainson.org. While you're there, you can subscribe to our newsletter to find out about new episodes and other fun stuff.
And you can always subscribe in your favorite podcast app. And if you are on iTunes, leave us a review. We'll be really, really, really grateful.
Totally. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at brains_on. Or you can always email us at brainson@m.org.
Thanks for listening.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.